feel like.
After looking at it, it was.
Is that rule, but I do ownership on the quarter lot, but you had to make some choices. You got some setbacks.
In agricultural zoning, it would want to get BZA every quarter.
Now, 6 o'clock.
Yes, I'd like to show first.
Time to start our work session. Our agenda has changed a little bit tonight, but I'm calling a work session to order at this time. Our first order of business will be the pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Everyone would stay standing, we'll have a moment of silence. Thank you. At this time, we'll have director's comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time.
Thank you. The next would be public comments limited to 3 minutes per speaker. Anyone from the public that is here for any other item than what's on the agenda for our work session, please come forward to the mic and state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll move on to the work session. And the first item is a discussion about DMP 1602 Rabbi Heights rezoning updates.
All right, this is a request to rezone 13.81 acres of tax map 18A10. It's from A1 Agricultural General to R3 Residential Planning Community. It's located in the Palmyra Election District as well as the Ribana Community Planning Area. This was last heard by the Planning Commission on August 24th. However, you all chose to defer action due to concerns over road access. This is a view of the property on the South Boston Road. You have the adjacent properties of zoning of A1 and R4. This is the plan that was reviewed by the Planning Commission on August 24th. And this is a revised plan. So previous plan, revised plan. They've added traffic circles here and here. There's an improved entrance exit scheme. Roads are now two ways. And there's also an emergency entrance, which is what I know Mr. Lago Orsino had commented on specifically during the hearing. The applicant is here. Should you have any questions, and we can explain more about that.
Where is the emergency?
Right down here, sir. But the folks turn around the emergency entrance. Mr. Chambers,
sure.
Take it away.
Feel free to come up here if you need to point.
I got the other place for you.
Okay, I appreciate it. The main comments that came up at the last meeting that I addressed here were something about having a turnaround or crossover so that someone forgetting their keys could move back and pick them up to their house. And VDOT has a requirement for 225 feet before you hit any sort of change in traffic. So when we first presented this plan, can you switch back to the August 24th? Okay, you see how that very short entrance there is certainly not 225 feet before it hits the circle for the townhouses. I went to VDOT and I talked with them and asked them about doing one-way traffic. Okay. I asked them about doing one-way traffic. It still has one-way traffic coming in and exiting until it hits the traffic circles. Now, the traffic circles are over 225 feet away from the entrances, and I think that is, you know, pretty much per VDOT's comments. If we were to try and do a crossover, like one of the members suggested, for the traffic coming out of the townhouse area, it would have to loop way into the community garden. So I didn't think that was beneficial option to doing that, so I came up with traffic circles to give people a chance to turn around, move back, go visit their neighbors, whatever they had to do before they got on the one-way portions of the road leading out to South Austin. The other concern, of course, was for the emergency entrance for fire trucks and rescue and whatnot. We thought the best idea to satisfy that was to combine the emergency entrance with our dedicated turnaround for Nevada County Sheriff. So we've got both of those shown, and the emergency road comes into one of the traffic circles, and the proposed turnaround was moved to a point where you had adequate sight distance in either direction. You have to come 14 and a half feet off the edge of pavement, establish a 500-foot line of sight, and then back off of that line of sight 5 feet. So I've got my clear sight lines indicated on the revised plat as well to the emergency entrance, as well as the regular entrance. And I'm hoping that I've satisfied everybody's comments. I don't know that I'd pick up a lost key before I got all the way down the subdivision. Usually, what I do is I leave these reading glasses at home and don't realize I've forgotten them until I get halfway to the office.
What is the width of this emergency?
The width of the emergency entrance is about 20 feet, but I'll tell you, well, yeah, about 20 feet, because...
Doesn't the fire department require 24 feet?
I thought it was 20 foot minimum, okay? We can look into that, because at one point in time I was reading through the ordinance, and it said something about 18 feet. We took up this issue at the last meeting, and...
I know that in another thing that we're working on tonight, VDOT told them the entrance had to be 24 feet, and they're going to have 27 feet.
Is that for two-way traffic? Because this is a purely emergency road.
Yeah, I'm just, what I'm trying to figure out is, because of these traffic circles, if a fire truck or something came in there, whether they would be able to manipulate these traffic circles. That was going to be my follow-up question.
Okay. Well, they are 50-foot radius circles, so they're plenty big. They're as big as anything in Lake Monticello currently.
Isn't the radius, not diameter, the radius?
Yeah, 50-foot radius. You got it.
So how would an emergency vehicle get to 1, 2, 3, 4 area?
We're 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's on the back side, on the left.
Oh, okay, I got you. The vehicle would have to either come in and go around further one-way traffic, or flip on its lights and either come in the emergency entrance, or come in against one-way traffic. You have a 20-foot road there, and the 20-foot road here again is as big as anything in Lake Monticello. But let me defer to Jason. Have you found the area in the ordinance that spells out the width of the road requirement?
I'm not exactly sure what we're talking about.
I might suggest before it actually comes to us again, and I don't know whether it's going to go before the TRC or not again, but maybe you should actually talk to the people with the fire department about the access, stuff like that.
Okay.
Because I don't want us to get into a situation and all of a sudden we approve something, and then all of a sudden you get shut down.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I was looking at that, trying to figure out how they could actually get to that and about the radius of these traffic circles. I know that another zoning we did at another place, and it could have been when we were doing something about the the assisted living thing, wasn't there a question about the radius thing there?
I think people had questions about access to that site, for the assisted living facility for Sycamore Square.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that there was a question about a fire department about the width of that road with that curb, you know.
Yeah, I vaguely recall that, yeah. I believe they were, everything for what they had submitted got approved and it was satisfied.
So have you talked to VDOT about any of this since it was deferred?
I emailed VDOT this plan on the 20th.
Uh-huh.
I called Mark Wood on Monday, and he said that something to the effect that he had comments, he would get them to me before this meeting, but that he was swamped.
Yeah. I just, you know, before it comes to us, I just like to make sure that VDOT is satisfied, and I'd like to be sure that the fire department thinks that they can maneuver if they had to bring in a longer fire truck.
Mm-hmm.
And for the protection of the people in that too.
Yeah.
That's just some of the questions I have. So I can see what you're trying to do here, but I also can see possibility of some problems or questions. Anyone else have any other questions? we need to know some of those answers of some of the things that I asked you about, because of the fact that, you know, for the safety and welfare and the well-being of anybody who's living in the county, we need to know that there is access for emergency vehicles. I mean, and even two, you have rescue squads and stuff like that, and so forth like that, too.
And James, if you could follow up with Mark Wood, Chief Corinne, just to make sure that...
You have a burden, I know that helps.
That we, meaning the line coverage on the edge, but we would need, give Mr. Chambers time to, if there are any comments, to change up before the October 25th. So it seems better.
A lot of times, it's protect you as well as everybody else.
Well, aside from road requirements, overall, does this concept seem to meet with your approval?
We'd have to discuss that at a meeting and so forth like that. So until we have a complete concept, I think it would be best if I not answer the question.
Okay. Then I will definitely look into the road width and get back with you at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next item on the agenda is the sign ordinance discussion.
Mr. Chairman, you may recall last month we briefly discussed the sign ordinance and gave you some examples from certain localities. You all asked us to come back with a comparison with more immediate counties like Alamon and Louisa. James had a brief presentation. And you all also have handouts from the courses how long and Louisa including as a sign ordinance. So we can give a brief little presentation for discussion on the comparison of these three.
I'm all kind of thick.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at that
one. Right.
Well, I looked at a comparison between Savannah, Louisa, and Albemarle with their signs, and looked at what they have for restricted signs, for temporary signs, and for business signs. Overall, all counties have prohibitions on flashing signs, on moving signs, on any ones which obstruct a point of ingress or egress, signs which imitate, you know, official traffic signs, just stop or danger signs. And then there's a couple of differences between the counties. For example, we have specifically against inflatable signs, pennants, portable, and then some special type of roof signs that aren't necessarily copied by Louisa or Albemarle. Louisa and Albemarle both had restrictions on signs that violate state or federal laws and outdoor advertising, things like that. But the main issue is that, like, the flashing and moving signs, which we've been concerned about, all three counties restricted those.
I noticed on the pennant outlaw also the pennant through the street and so forth.
So does the sign at the high school constitute a flashing sign?
I have to go put over definitions of ordinance.
I think flashing. Okay.
Actually originally when we discussed the signing ordinance and did the signing ordinance, that was one of the things we may not be able to do. At the time that was erected, I asked the planning director at that time, how could that be? And they said they got a permit. And I
believe it wouldn't count as a flashing sign, it would be a illuminated sign, as long as it doesn't move, change at intervals of less than 20 seconds.
So even the county administrator at our last, when he made his presentation, said it was illegal.
I don't necessarily think it's illegal, except for, and then Steve Tuggle mentioned something about the actual size possibly would be more than this.
Okay. I I was just questioning because I noticed that today down at a service station down at Fort Union, they have a sign that does the same thing with the gas prices.
Yeah. There's one thing, Albemarle, I believe it's Albemarle, they have a very large sign ordinance, and they allow flashing signs that show like the temperature or the time, as long as it doesn't change in any more than like 5 or 10 seconds.
Yeah, and I think some of them.
Albemarle went really in-depth. You'll have a copy of Albemarle, who's in, who got the sign ordinance in front of you. Albemarle's went really in-depth, that's what constitutes like a flashing sign or a temporary sign, things of that nature.
Electronic message signs, the flashing sign is defined as an illuminated sign of which all or part of illumination is flashing or intermittent, or changing in degrees of intensity, brightness, or color. Electronic message signs that meet the requirements of this article 2250 are not considered flashing signs. So I think that would kind of limit the legal sign would be something like Las Vegas type of signs that are.
I know in our ordinance on page 360, we also have a thing about signs that violate state or federal law, whether or not identified in this ordinance.
Yeah, but effectively anything in the zoning ordinance can't be a violation of state or federal law. It's a catch-all.
Yeah, this slide is by no means.
Do we know? I wonder, is any of the signs that we actually permit, does any of them possibly violate the state law or
just not to my knowledge,
yeah. But I see that type one, the particular type sign would say it had different
places. That's why we mainly VDOT, when we talk about state, they don't want anything located in the right of way, so we're always wanting to see where something is located, make sure it's out of the right of way before we permit it.
Well, actually, going back and looking at this and reading something just now that talking about illuminated signs, it says a copy of electronic message signs may not flash, scroll, move, or change at time interval of less than 20 seconds.
Yes, so I'm not sure what the high school sign is, how tall that changes. It may have originally been set at the 20 seconds, I'm not sure. I don't know. But.
And, you know, that would be my concern. I don't have any problems with these signs, but the county is set an example. I'm not sure we are. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there is a lot of violations in the county. And what bothers me was the fact that the county administrator pointed out the ones that were being violated on county property. And maybe that sign is not involved. Maybe I misunderstood back when we did.
We've never been asked to investigate a violation on the high school sign.
Well, exactly what I was told is they got a permit. They didn't have to get a permit, but they did anyway. That's what I was told at the time.
They, at the very least, that sign will require a building permit. They may technically be exempt from some of the zoning requirements under state law, but I do know that building permits require any sort of footers or anything like that. And electrical permits, but they do have to meet those requirements.
What I'd like to do is, I see that in a lot of the things, we're exactly the same as other counties. Would it be, and maybe this is completely wrong idea, would it be good that the planning department got with some of the business community and talked about what signs, what their concerns are, their exact concerns? Because the last time we did this signing ordinance, we worked with the business community for a long, long time before these, and they seem to be satisfied.
I asked Mr. Smith for some time after the business community he received. It seems that some do want flashing signs, more less restrictions on temporary signs and less restrictions on portable signs. That seems to be specifically what some of this is concerned about. And also, they would like to see us lessen our square footage requirement on shopping center.
I've got signs for all three counties, the definition, and then we've got business signs, how they're regulated in A1 zoning, and then business signs, how they're regulated in commercial style zoning. And by and large, Louisa and Albemarle allow for larger either area signs or larger type of signs in that in both agricultural and in commercial areas.
Well, my personal thing is I think we would probably be more likely to go to what Louisa does than Albemarle County. But we're more like Louisa than we are Albemarle County.
Louisa does have some weaknesses in the ordinances that I talked about House and Fitchman. She's working in both localities.
Right.
The man is stronger than Louisa is stronger than others, so we may want to take a look at Louisa's and see pick the best from theirs and try to match with ours.
Would that be a good thing to try to do and then talk to the business community? What are they talking about temporary signs? What are they talking about moving signs, simple, portable signs?
I think portable signs is basically need those
the ones on wheels with
the trails. Well, the ones that most counties seem to prohibit.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And we're talking just a few business people. I'm not sure if this is a general sense of the business community. That's why I'd like to get Mr. Smith here to talk to you all in the interaction with the business community.
Yeah.
He's had conferences that has people in commission meetings.
Well, I told you today that I was. I frequently go to Fort Union there, and right up the front where the sign for Sal's and the grocery store and so forth like that, there's a portable sign that's been sitting there for a long, long time that is broken on one end and just sitting right down on the ground and so forth like that. It's very.
It's not portable anymore because it's broken.
Yeah. It's actually dilapidated.
I always like the folks who. Anybody who tell them they have the portable signs that they would take it to mount on concrete. They would still say, well, ugly sign is in concrete.
But we do have portable signs that are being used in the county. There's actually, and some of them may have been used before we put portable into the ordinance. Because I do know that actually one on the village. Shopping center side also, but that still has its wheels on it. They use it occasionally.
So I would like to get Mr. Smith here to talk about this issue. He's just been available. I thought he was going to be here tonight, but he had another conference. So anyway. He's kind of going to be the man. I haven't directly spoken to a lot of these folks.
And I think we need to try to get more business to the county. We've got unnecessary restrictions to promote that. We should know that. This would be what we hear the county say. I'm sure some people want us to do whatever we talk.
And I had an idea of possibly bringing some folks who have issues with ordinance to the work session or something.
My other main concern is if we do change the sign ordinances, are we going to be in a position to enforce what we come up with?
That's always a challenge. And Mr. Miller is.
I understand that, but I'm not. I'm just saying that there is. What bothers me when somebody comes to us and tells us about signs that are in violation on county property. And they point it out, and nothing's. But it seems to be okay. You know, that just does wrong. because I think we need to treat everybody equally.
Mr. Miller does, at least work on complaints, because he called me, because he had got a complaint about the Boy Scout Christmas tree sign. So he took care of that.
Yeah.
So he does at least do the investigation.
He does, he picks out the questions, and the signs is, I don't think we generally got a lot of complaints on the vendor 2.5 years. Most people seem to be, they're not complaining. I'm sure there's people who have signs in 2.5 years I've been here that aren't necessarily legal, but.
Yeah.
We haven't noticed it, we haven't got the complaint on. So.
And, you know, I don't have a real big problem with some of the stuff that they're talking about. It's just that I like to, if we're gonna do it, we need to be concise, and, you know, we need to treat everybody equally.
And what I've told Mr. Smith is the planning commission worked really hard on this several years back, 5 years, not a long time ago, really.
Yeah.
And any changes, we better, you know, make sure that they're the right changes, and we're not just reacting to a couple of folks who were irritated they couldn't get the sign.
So maybe we could also, at that same time, look at some of the things that Louisa might have that we don't allow that maybe should go, and what we could strengthen some things, or we can make some things more flexible.
Yeah, I think there is a room for flexibility, particularly like I mentioned last month, where churches.
Uh-huh.
Churches out of town having trouble with they may have a big, huge parcel for them to the one sign, and it's great problems with finding out where to park and stuff like that. And so there's some ways we can improve the ordinance there. But I'd like to get more feedback from Mr. Smith on what the business community actually specifically wants to change before we make a recommendation to you all.
I think the sign, I talked to Steve one time about, I have a piece of, about the zone B1 at intersection 713 and 15, which would be a good site for business. And I asked him about putting up a sign, and he said, well, you could probably put up a 3x3 and get away with it. And I said, 3x3, I mean, that's hardly worth my time. To go down Richmond sign up here, maybe have a nice sign for us. And, you know, put on it, you know, zone B1, excellent for restaurant and so forth. And boy, we really want to do this in 14 and believe. And I looked at it and I said, 3x3, that's not even.
I'm not sure about Steve's interpretation here.
Well, you buzz on by that thing at 55 miles an hour.
I asked
your budget president, I said, forget it. You know, it's not worth it.
The real estate signs are exempt.
You've got to remember Steve. That was one thing Steve was against. Steve hates signs.
I would consider the real estate sign exempt. If it's.
Well, I asked him, I said, well, in front of my office, I got 4x6 out there. And he said, well, yeah, that's a permanent sign.
Well, down the road on the left-hand side that y'all built up, it used to be a contractor or something.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on the left side, they had this great big sign.
Yeah. It's all there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for some type of uniformity, but I don't think we should be real rigid on the signs unless there's a need to be. Because we're going to come on with enough criticism anyway from the people out there. And, especially those if you tell the people in business, they say, you know, it's hard making a dollar here in a competitive world.
But we also don't want it to look like going through Florida and South Carolina.
Oh, I agree with you.
Or
south of the border. Yeah. I agree with you. But so you're saying 3x3.
You'll notice when Mr. Zimmer, you're going through my neck of the woods in Southwest Virginia next week, that we don't have a lot of time ordinances. So you'll see what happens in the country.
So you're supposed to put up a sign about
it. You'd be surprised.
So you're saying 3x3 is not necessarily an accurate interpretation?
It may not be. If you're putting up a real estate sign, it's considered exempt under the ordinance. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to sell property, we have the up at the crossroads, we have that real estate sign in there, zone whatever.
Right. Okay, I'll get with you on that then.
Yeah.
Because we always have a place in 14 where you can get breakfast. And I have people calling and asking, where can you get breakfast? Go to Zion Crossroads. Where are you going to spend the night?
Go to Zion Crossroads. We have nothing against the law.
The post office closes at...
It's open for 4 hours a day.
Is it a lot of...
I don't believe it is. I'm just learning that.
You can come back to our office, Mr. Johnson, and we can reevaluate your application for sign.
Put the fine tune in them, okay.
No permit is required for a real estate sign.
There you go.
Yeah.
Steve was a great guy, but you talk to him about size, he hates signs. He just hates signs. It's the scourge of Fuchsia, I guess, I don't know.
I was trying to find a picture of a sign, a violation I did when I was town manager of Gate City, show you about Southwest Virginia. I'll find it for the next meeting, but let's just say I have some...
Could y'all come up with some suggestions about some of the things that Louise has got that are different than ours, that maybe theirs is better than ours? I don't want to, if we have stuff that we think is, that theirs is weak and ours is better, we don't want to go down to their weakness.
I'm supposed to have lunch with Allison Nitschen, actually, coming up, so I'm definitely going to pick her brain, she's worked with both ordinances.
Yeah.
And I'll try to take that from that conversation and try to do our research and come back with some suggestions. I'm feel somewhat in the dark about the businesses. No one's complaining directly to the planning department. Mentioned stuff that Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Nichols.
But nobody's come to the planning department complaining about they couldn't get a sign permit or whatever.
I would encourage both Jason to come, but also maybe Brace to us.
Yeah, that's what I suggested to him when his schedule frees up.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do that, and he probably would have been here tonight. But yeah, I think it's key to have you bring some folks in who are actually affected by the perceived negative aspects of our ordinance. Mr. Tugwell would say there are no negative aspects of the ordinance.
At our last meeting, you gave us Dinwiddie and Augusta, right?
Amherst. I did have a role in amending a lot of the Dinwiddie's. They had a pretty good sign ordinance in place before I got there, but we did a lot of work with the business community on the electronic sign.
Yeah.
The sign companies, that was something that everybody could live with. That's one of the reasons I threw that. And plus how we address what we call all appearances sign on Google.
There is one thing about that friendship that signed in high school. It says all electronic message signs must be turned off and closed to business unless it's displaying time or temperature. And I think that's the same in a lot of different counties. I mean, some people only allow that for time and temperature, right?
I believe that's one of the things that Albemarle County, I believe, has listed in there specifically for time and temperature.
Do you think do we need to have any more discussion about it tonight, or do we need to let y'all take some look at some of the things?
Just to recap, I'll take a look at the Louisa ordinance and some of the other ordinances and try to pick what we might recommend. We'll try to get Mr. Schmidt and potentially some business folks to come to a future work session or meeting.
Could you actually get him to send you a list of specific complaints?
I did ask for a list, and what I got was just what I told you. We need to look at portal signs, flashing signs, and temporary signs. But as far as exact specifics, I'm not sure if he's even, he
he may have gotten this information from Mr. Popowitz, and may not have been directly complaining about it, you know, so he's just going through some old notes. So it may take him more time actually talking with these people and getting more specifics.
The portable signs are restricted in all areas. They used to get tickled, they had these, for a while in Charlottesville, they had these things that looked like tractor trailers, but they were about 2 or 3 foot wide.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a sign on both sides, and they would drive all over town. Yep.
Good news, Mrs. Eager's here, so. Did you make them?
Yeah.
See, Terry and then Fred, you taking credit?
No, sir. All I'm doing is caring.
Do we have any more discussion about the sign?
Just want to add one thing for the work session next month. That's going to be our CIP discussion with the department heads.
They are going to be here.
But Mr. Robinson will be coordinating that.
So will all of them be able to, in an hour at a time?
I told them that we would do an hour, and then what's left, we would bring the board back to the regular meeting.
Okay.
So we were going to have a pretty large agenda. I don't think we have any cases.
One or two applications.
The,
it'll be a fairly large agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, for Brandon comes back off, that's not public here.
It'll be right in there, and that's like it all.
There's no public hearing, so we'll clean the mind of continue conversation after the regular meeting commences.
Okay. If we don't have any more discussion about this, we'll end the work session this time. We'll come back into a regular session at 7 o'clock.
Good thing. Are you nervous?
I'm about to yawn and fall asleep.
I know. Did you get you a cookie?
No, he played baseball in high school, and he recruited to
last time. So
She makes good cookies.
Okay.
I You don't know the other.
I'm doing good, how are you? You too. Now 7 o'clock, recalling the Fluvanna County Planning Commission regular meeting for September 28, 2016, order. Our first business item is the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'd like everybody to stay standing. We'll have a moment of silence at this time. At this time, we will have our director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only items I have to report this month are that the applicant calls for fuels as withdrawn vote. They're resuming requests and their special use permit requests. So those actions will not be heard by planning commission or with the rezoning heard by the board's processes.
Thank you. Next item is our first of two public comment sections for the night. This is to allow anyone to speak of items other than the public hearing items that are on the agenda for the night. Anyone that wants to come forward to speak of any other matter other than these can come forward, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will move on to the next item on our agenda. It is our minutes from July 27th and August 24th. Does anybody have any comments about the minutes from either of these dates? Does anybody have a motion for either of these minutes or both of these minutes? Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Gaines to accept the minutes as written. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0 and one absent.
Mr. Chairman, the record to show Mr. Martin Messina has not arrived.
The record will show that Mr. Longacina has not arrived at this time. Was that motion for both sets of minutes, or was that?
That was for the July 27th and August 24th.
Okay. Do we need to have a second vote?
Motion to approve both.
Yes, please.
Thank you. The next item are our public hearings for tonight. Our first public hearing is SUP 1610 VFW Telecom Tower.
Thank you. This is a request for a special use permit from a previous special use permit 1103 with respect to approximately 3.5 acres of tax map 47A10. This is located in a rural residential planning area. A previous special use permit number 1103 was for a 195-foot tall monopole tower with support facilities. This particular special use permit would amend the height of the tower 250 feet and change the style to that of a self-support lattice tower. The tower will be used for commercial purposes, but which will have space for county antenna arrays for emergency services. Brief overview, again, the previous special use permit, which was approved, 195-foot tall monopole tower and support facilities. The commercial use stays the same. The fact that the county will have access to this tower also stays the same. It was approved with 14 conditions back on November 14, 2011 by the Planning Commission and finalized by the board on December 21st, 2011. So what we're changing here is the height of the tower, the 250 feet, and the style changes from monopole to self-support lattice tower. There have been changes to the conditions due to the height and style of town. Marilyn,
so is the Lattice Tower, what they're building there, the sheriff's office also?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Takes longer. This is the location of the AFW site. Surrounding zoning is a low density A1 agricultural general. This is a view of the VFW building as it exists. The tower is located in the woods off here to the right. Specifically in through here. It's going to be screened by existing tree coverage as well as fencing around the site itself. This is the VFW structure that we saw. It's that main gravel road. And then out here through the woods, surrounded by fencing and screened by tree buffer, which are replaced here. It's just a close-up view of the compound. The height of the physical tower itself is 250 feet, and that is stated in the conditions that the structure of the tower cannot exceed 250 feet. That does not include lighting, lightning rods, antennas, or any other ancillary products. Conclusion is that the use which has already been approved, you're merely amending a previous special use agreement in regards to the height and style of the tower, as well as changes to the conditions. It is a commercial use tower with room for county equipment. The commission should consider potential adverse impacts, such as the visual impact or the amount of the tower structural weather. Both the applicant and our emergency services coordinator, Cheryl Elliott, are here to answer any questions you or members of the public may have. Thank you.
Just one question. So that everybody will know that I asked you earlier today about on one of the written sheets, it shows 254 feet. Is that to allow for the lightning rod?
254 feet is up to the top of the lightning rod. The structure of the actual physical tower itself is 250 feet.
Because any other types, everything else shows 250 feet. I just want to make sure that everybody understood what that was meant for. Would the applicant like to come forward?
I'd also like to, I'm Cheryl Elliott, the emergency service coordinator. I wanted to tell you why this is coming back to go larger. With the previously approved 195, that this site is one of the six sites that we need for the public safety system. And we're working with the SBT to put the county's emergency or public safety equipment on that tower, and we were going to build it with an extension to hold the antennas, and it didn't make a lot of sense to put an extension on a new tower, so why not just build it to what we need? And working with the applicant, we decided to go ahead and make it a public safety grade tower and make it tall enough that it would reach, that we could reach what we need. And then it also, in the meantime, it gives the applicant actually a little more advantage with the other towers in the area too. But it gives public safety primarily the height that we need to get connected to the other towers.
Chairman, can I ask you another question? Do I understand the case that 250 feet is necessary to accommodate the system of emergency communications for the end?
Yes.
So that's one of the requirements of the ordinance, that it has to be showing that 199 will work.
Thank you.
I'm Stephen Dell, with National Communication Towers, also present. I'm Jimmy Adams with National Communication Towers. We have a presentation prepared if you all would like to see it. However, the one that Mr. Newman just ran through covers 99.9% of the same information that's in ours. I'd be happy to run through it if you'd like. Otherwise, I'd be happy to entertain any questions you or anyone in the audience may have about the tower. There was one concern Mr. Newman noted about structural failure of the tower. We had a tower engineer what's referred to in the industry as breakpoint technology. So there is an area in the tower that's purposefully designed so that should you have a catastrophic failure of the tower, it'll actually doesn't fall over like a tree, it actually just folds over on itself. And then the remaining portion of the tower, that portion folded over actually completely separated from the rest of the tower structure, it would fall within 130 feet on this particular tower design. So it would stay well within the property lines of the parcel of the site on. And in addition to that, the tower, as Mr. Newman alluded to, there are different class structures. Not to get too technical about it, when you have a structure whose primary and initial purpose is rehabilitation of emergency service equipment, it's a different class structure than typical design for a lattice of the exact same size carrying quote-unquote commercial carrier equipment. That allows for even heavier, robust design and larger over design allowances to ensure that the likelihood of failure is extraordinarily unlikely. These towers are so over designed that if you actually got to the point where the tower failed, you'd have a wind event where you'd have no other trees or structures within the entire area that would survive before the tower you got to the point where it failed. They do a really good job of designing the towers. So with that said, if there's any other questions or concerns, I'd be happy to address them at this time.
Did anyone else want to see their presentation, or do you think the presentation was satisfactory? I have one question. What is the time frame of this? If it's approved, when do you think this would be completed?
Well, we're working very closely with the county on that. As soon as we have approval, we will literally get everything in place to come to the county. Within 24 to 48 hours of approval to submit site plans so that they can be approved and then move very rapidly into construction so that we can deliver the co-locatable structure on or before the required dates for the county. What is it?
March or April.
Right.
There's a when we plan to have all of the towers up and then they have our co-location stuff on.
If this were to proceed, approval here and approval for me, we would immediately submit for construction and we would have that tower constructed well before March or April timeline unless we had some really, really crazy winter weather that stay in place for like 2 solid months. But we'd be very easy to deliver that tower before the county ends up deadline.
Does anyone have any other questions for the applicant? If not, we will open a public hearing at this time. Anyone that wants to come forward and speak about this matter may come forward and state the name and address, come to the microphone. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one come forward, we'll open the discussion with the Planning Commission. This is something that we actually approved the actual site some time ago and tests and so forth like that. I do know that the emergency communication stuff and stuff has been working for years and years to get this, because in some places in our county, the communication emergency service is almost zero. And it's very important that the emergency services can protect the people in these areas. Anybody have any comments?
I think soon as that.
Yeah. It's up on the screen. Okay, if there's no other discussion, do I have a motion?
Yes, I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 1610.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Gaines, a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Be 4-0, and Mr. Lagunzina has not arrived.
The next item on the agenda is SUP 1609, Coral Development.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. We have a special use permit request. Identify this application, SUP 1609, from Palmer Solar Center, LLC. This is a request for a special use permit to construct a major utility, or in other words, a solar farm, on property that's on A1 and I1, and the parcels are specifically identified as tax map 5, section A, parcels 23 and 23E. Just to clarify, there are two parcels involved in this request. They are located in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. The definition of a major utility is on the screen, defined as facilities for the distribution, collection, treatment, production, transmission, and generation of public, private, and central utilities. Then it gives some examples. This particular project will involve the construction and placement of solar modules or solar panels on aluminum or steel wrapping structures, as well as inverters that will be placed on concrete pads. The project does not involve the construction of any new buildings. The racking structures will be approximately 12 feet in height at their tallest point, and they will be tilted 30 degrees. They could be designed to remain fixed, or they could be designed to rotate in order to track the sun from east to west. This project will interconnect to Central Virginia Electric Cooperative's electric system. After construction is complete, the site is monitored remotely. There will be some access from time to time by personnel for maintenance and so forth. The subject parcels involved in this request are being leased by the applicant, just to clarify. There will be leased for a period of up to 35 years. At the end of the lease, the equipment is proposed to be removed. And in addition to the two parcels, there is some tree clearing that will take place to prevent shading. And the existing private road that you'll see on the rendering, road lanes is covered in the agreement with the property owners that involved. This is an aerial image of the property. It's located off Little Creek Road. You can see just to the east here, Route 15. This is in the southwest corner of the intersection of Route 250 and 15. And these are the two subject parcels here. You can see they're primarily open with the vegetation around the property lines. And this is the applicant's sketch plan. And you can see the tree clearing areas that are shown on the adjoining properties here, here, and here. Just to clarify, those tree clearing areas are not necessarily going to be cleared in their entirety. That's just the area that the applicant has identified as areas they may need to clear trees. They would like to leave as much vegetation as possible to screen the project. This is a view of the entrance to the site from Little Creek Road. You can see the private road here that's going to be used for access to the site. This is named Palmer Farm Lane. And then as you travel further to Palmer Farm Lane, this is the view you currently see. It's currently contained in agricultural use, which will be removed if this request is successful. Just another view here of the existing property. You can see an adjoining residential use there at the end of Palmer Farm Lane. And this is an example of the type of solar structures that will be constructed on the property. These are the steel or aluminum steel racking structures with solar panels or solar modules. So to conclude, this is a special use permit request to construct a major utility slash solar farm. This project is located away from the main roads and primarily out of public view, and this project currently appears to meet all county requirements. Any potential adverse impacts primarily affect the adjacent residences that are on the farm. A sample motion is on the screen for the Planning Commission, should you choose to take action tonight, and complete staff's presentation. The applicant is present tonight for additional questions.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Robinson? Would the applicant like to come forward at this time?
Good evening, gentlemen. I believe the presentation very clearly said what we're looking to do. We don't have a following presentation to add on, but if you have any questions, I'd love to answer.
Is there any environmental concerns with this is the first time you've done a solar farm, so I've tried to do a little bit of research, but it's...
acres, trees have been taken down to open up the view shed, I guess.
To open up the view shed. So the only reason we're concerned with trees is shading with the panels, correct? So the maximum you would clear is 10 acres out of the mark 20 to 25, I believe. And we're looking more at doing 7 acres, so just 10 would be the maximum.
And all the panels are the existing agricultural features.
Correct.
You're just clearing shade.
Correct. And we have current tree planting agreements with the eastern property, but not yet with the southern property.
Would this these panels affect the water flow into the land, or adversely affect any weather streams or something like that? I was looking at some stuff online that says a possibility that the temperatures underneath it could be reduced by 4 to 5 degrees.
So,
five or 45?
4 to 5. Sorry.
So solar panels in the world of stormwater management and all that are still considered permeable surfaces, so they aren't going to change the flow of water throughout the site. All existing streams and water flow will remain intact. With the piles, there will be no concrete structures with them. It'll just be the aluminum or steel pile in the ground. And according to the United States Army Corps of Engineers, that is not an impact on any sort of water flow.
You mentioned that you haven't received an agreement with the southern property.
Correct.
Now, in the case that they decide that they do not want to cut down any trees, what other direction would you need to move your panels, or how many more acres would you need to clear to cover for the southern parking lot?
So I don't think it would be a question of more acres. You might be able to shift the panels further north to avoid those southern trees. There's still, between Little Creek and our project, there's still 50 feet worth of trees, and those trees, as you saw in the picture, are at most 15 to 20 feet tall. We wouldn't need to clear but a few. The site plan was just to show a representation of what could be.
Do these panels have any toxic materials, if they break or anything like that? Do any toxic materials go into the soil?
Yes, sir.
Is there any effect on birds or any other wildlife?
No, sir. We've had a T&E, threatened endangered species study conducted on site. There were no concerns with local T&E animals, but it doesn't pose a threat to any existing wildlife in the area.
What are the life cycle of these panels?
The life cycle of the panels? So the lease, I believe, is for 35 years. The life cycle is anywhere from 25 to 35 years, and that's just due to efficiency of the panels. The panels, right, 25 to 35 years.
So ongoing maintenance activity. Clean these things, like clean the windows of your house, or what do you do to keep them on a regular basis?
I believe Palmer Road is a gravel road at this point. Standard operation maintenance would be cleaning the panels, just getting the dust off them, make sure they're still able to absorb as much sunlight as possible. And then just any general wear and tear. If we have a tracker, moving a motor, shifting the panels up east to west, and then just standard electrical checks.
How many of these projects have you completed nationwide?
Several. So we're nationwide. We're currently constructing Florida, Correct, this is all improvement, correct. We even have eight projects successfully constructed out in North Carolina.
Any other in Virginia?
We are currently working on, I believe, one other in Virginia, Martin Solar Center.
If this, I don't know exactly how to word it, if this was not successful, and either you went out of business or something of that nature, what would happen to these panels?
So we have it strictly in a lease agreement that whether we go out of business or at the termination of the lease agreement, we are responsible for removal of the structure.
That's addressed in one of the suggested conditions.
Mm-hmm. The planning department will hold the property and the operator accountable.
Yeah, I saw that it's a condition. I just wanted to verify.
Correct. I believe that's condition 8 listed in the staff report.
It's condition 8.
We just wanted to confirm that there was a timeline noted with that as well, but it wasn't an immediate expectation of removal to allow up to 120 days to remove the system.
Anybody else have any questions for the applicant? Thank you. At this time, we will open the public hearing on SUP 1609. Anyone that wants to come forward and speak about this project, please feel free to come forward, state your name and address. At the microphone, you will be allowed 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll open the discussion of the Planning Commission.
Seems exciting to me, something a little bit more cutting edge coming to Savannah County.
Yeah, I tried to look up a lot on the internet about it, and I couldn't figure out some of it because some of it was in foreign countries and stuff like that. So it was.
Worked a lot of this by working in natural resources. Been exposed to some of this. But what's the megawatts we're producing?
We're proposing a 5 megawatt site.
Okay.
And yes.
Okay. And I mean the biggest environmental drawback to solar panels is often they kind of cut down on the trees, kind of convert things like that. In this case, they're taking agricultural fields that the landowner is really converting, I guess.
So the forestry department would be more excited about that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we have any other discussion? Do I have a motion?
I will make a motion. I move that the Planning Commission recommends approval of SUP 1609, a request to allow for a utility with respect to 57 acres of tax map 5, section A, parcels 23 and 23B, subject to the 9 conditions with the addition of a 120-day window.
30 days.
Is that?
I think it's 100 days.
Okay, so with a 120-day window added to condition number 8.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Yes, you do.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer, a second by Mr. Gaines. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 4-0, but Mr. 1 with Mr. Larkin Zingham not in attendance. Okay, our next item on the agenda is ZMP 1605, Fluvanna Self Storage.
CP Burns Properties LLC, identified as application number ZMP 1605. This is a request to rezone 3.67 acres involving two parcels identified as tax map 8 to section 8, parcels 31 and 32. The applicant is requesting to rezone from agricultural general, A1, to business general, which is B1. These parcels are in the Palmyra election district and within the Ravenna community planning area. This is a map showing the location of the site along Lake Monticello Road, which is about 618. Here's the site here. And Route 53, Townships and Parkways to the west, about half a mile away. And then you can see there's the Lake Monticello development across the road from the site. And this is an aerial photograph. You can see on each of the parcels there are existing structures. And there's some vegetation on this property here. This is the site plan or the sketch plan that's submitted by the applicant. This shows the proposal to vacate the interior property line. And here's an existing structure which is proposed to be removed. And then this is an existing structure which the applicant plans to retain on the property. And then this is another page of the applicant's sketch plan, which shows the proposal to construct two storage buildings. One storage building will be 5,000 square feet. The other will be 5,400 square feet. This is the view currently from Lake Monticello Road. This is the dwelling that is supposed to be removed, and just on the other side of the fence there, that is the dwelling that's going to remain on the property. So the two storage buildings that you saw on the sketch plan are going to go somewhere in this area here. And this is a view showing, looking west towards Route 53. And then this is an opposite view looking east on Lake Monticello Road. This view shows the property's proximity to some adjacent commercial uses in the area. And the applicant has an existing commercial establishment just beyond those trees there. So this request is considered to be an extension or an expansion of that existing operation. It'll be on two separate tracts of land, but these two are related. So again, this is a 3.67 acre property in the Ravenna community planning area. The comprehensive plan considers this an area that is conducive to further development due to its location and proximity to transportation and residential. If this rezoning request is approved, the applicant will have to submit a final site development plan for review and approval. So to conclude, this rezoning request appears to meet the intent of the comprehensive plan in that it is within the Ravenna community planning area, which the comprehensive plan specifically identifies as a primary infrastructure service area, which needs additional services and infrastructure to accommodate more growth. The Planning Commission should consider how this request does or does not align with the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan as part of this request. A sample motion is on the screen for the Planning Commission's use. That concludes the staff's presentation, and I will note that the applicant is present for questions as well.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Robinson? Would the applicant like to come forward at this time?
Hi, my name is Carlos Burns. I'm here representing C.B. Burns Properties. Basically, what this is, the C.B. Burns Properties LLC is an organization that was set up for the rental of the house and the property there. The concept we're looking at here is to maintain the rental house there until we need to expand into that space. So I think you remember in some of our previous discussions that we sort of build as we need. The very small piece of property has a dilapidated, deserted trailer there and an old driveway into a parking lot, into a garage. We're planning to take all those structures down and replace them. We're going to move the fence a little
closer to the house, not much, just about 20 feet, I think, and set those two buildings in there. I think you heard a lot of the discussion we talked about prior to this as far as the lighting and meeting all the lighting requirements. This will be an extraordinarily low usage kind of thing. Even fully developed, when we've got the whole site developed, will only be about 50% of the existing Clematis self-storage site. It's just 450 feet down the street. So this is a much more conducive spot for us. To be honest with you, we tried to get this property about a year ago, and were unable to do it at that time. The owner just didn't respond to us. And it was just by the grace of God that we ran into them when they were there doing a sale and talked to them about getting the site, and were able to purchase the site. We currently own this facility at this time. We do have the house is rented at this time, the one on the left-hand property.
Just to let the commission know, I did have a discussion with Mr. Burns about if there was any succession, that residence would be non-conforming. With the regulations regarding non-conforming uses will apply.
Right. The intention is no change to that whatsoever. The only thing that can change relative to that is there's a fence that separates the two pieces of property, and we're going to shift the fence over to allow to give us the driveway space we need for trucks and like fire engines and things to make the turn there. So very similar kind of thing. We would in this case we would propose to use the more natural tone. We won't continue the color scheme of the NSL stores down there. Those days are gone now. We'll be using the natural tones that we were proposing at the other site. We'll be using all the dark skies lighting, cutoff lighting on the buildings. As you can see, we'll be doing screening around the houses. We have contacted every adjacent property owner here, and I believe you'll see in your package, we have several letters of agreement with the property owners that they're in concurrence that this is an okay site. And as before, if people have questions, we'll obviously try to work with them the best we can. And as I mentioned before, we are looking to do this as quickly as we can because we literally were turning away customers this year. We just didn't have enough space for them. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
One question I had doesn't really make any difference, but I was just something that came up today that I was thinking about. Is there any way that you or your employees can have internal access to this property without going out to the highway?
The only space that we would have any question about is, I don't have a house.
What I'm saying is, would you be able to go from your current property to this property?
No, and the only reason is, and I'm going to point it out right here. You see right here? This is a residential private driveway. If they gave us permission, we have a little golf cart that we get around, and we don't even have to get on the street, and we can get back and forth between that. There's a 50-foot pipe stem essentially right there. That is the only separation. This is the gym. He has units in there that we rent as part of self-storage. And then self-storage is back over here. Our credit card is only back over here.
I was just trying to, for your benefit, brother. I know y'all use golf cart or something similar to that to go around. So I was trying to figure that out.
That's nice, but it's appropriate for us to be going across private property.
Thank you.
Any questions? Other questions?
Anyone else have questions from the applicant? And of course, your lighting going in on the road and so forth like that would be the short lights.
Right, it's going to be on the buildings. All our lights are now on our buildings.
Okay. So nothing on the driveway or anything?
No, I don't think on the inter- potentially we might put something, some low-level lighting right down in this area just for safety. And as far as sight lines and everything, we have really good sight lines, especially given that we're such a low level. We'll be low level even fully developed. Right now, this will probably
And at this time, you're only talking about two units, right?
Right. And I expect this to last five to 8 years would be good. If we do it 5 years, that would be great. I would love a light.
I know that the DDOT has a few questions about site distance if it, the traffic decreased to over 50 today, per day.
Never been, would never see that kind of traffic.
In that type of facility, I didn't think so either, but I.
This is 50% the size of our existing facility, and we see less than half of that traffic right now.
If so, you're prepared, if it ever came to that point, you're prepared to.
We are.
To comply.
What I would, absolutely, and one thing I would propose is, there is right, let's see here, right there, I think, there's a tree right there, a big old maple tree. And what I would propose is, we'll go talk to Tony Rockline, who owns this. I have zero doubt that Tony won't work with us, and what we're gonna do is trim off a few of the bottom limbs there to even give us, we'll have about 1,000 feet of distance down that road, because you're going past the NFL towards that one you can see. There's a dip there, but you can still see cars.
And I think the fire department talked to you about the entrance. They'd like to see 24 feet, but you say that y'all prefer 27 feet.
Right. That's they want at least 24, and we'll be doing roughly 27 feet now. We just want so that traffic can go both ways on it, but you don't want it too wide, because you don't want people backing up your building to run in. So it's sort of a balance being there.
Okay. Does anyone else have questions for the applicant? Okay, if there's no more questions for the applicant, we'll open the public hearing at this time. The public hearing for DMP 1605 Savannah Self-Storage is open at this time. Anyone wishing to make a comment about this DMP 1605, please come forward to the microphone, state your name and your address. You will be limited to 3 minutes.
Hello. Jane Martin, and I live at 6971 Ponchell Road, and my property is behind the proposed, I guess, zoning change. Okay. We have been in this, in our home for 40 years now, almost 40 years, and we built a log cabin when we built our home because it was rural. We like the privacy, and we like the environment that Savannah County presents. This proposal would take in the house, both the house and where the trailer is located now, will impact us greatly because all this will take up my whole front yard. So, you know, I guess I'm thinking about some of the issues, my privacy issues, since we have the driveway that comes down between the fitness center and the proposed storage building, how that's going to affect people pulling in, and there is no turnabout. They would have to come down to either the right or to my property on the left, and before they can turn around. Okay, we are thinking of putting up some type of privacy signs, a private driveway, or a turnaround, or something. But we're going to have a wall on one side and a tree factor on the other. It's a big tunnel that will come back to the property. I know that Carlos has presented to put a trees or, you know, work with us and try to make it more private, but. If he changes the zoning and in the future proposes to put more storage buildings in even where the house is located now, he may be renting the house out. But if that presents more storage areas in the future within the next 5 years, then my property is going to be affected because that will be all of my front yard.
Now, that's not going to be on your yard, but you'll have a view of it.
That will be my view. I will have fencing and lighting and probably noise. If it's going to be 24/7, people come in and they use these storage areas for working shops, sanding. They do, you know, I don't know, you know, you could have some type of engine repair or something going on in them, there could be some type of environmental impact to where the water may spill off into the driveway. You know, and I don't know about this runoff, what it's going to have for runoff. The way the trailer was set up, it's on a slope, and their well was in bad shape, and all that water was coming down her driveway.
Ma'am, you need to finish up.
Okay, well, I just wanted to express my opinion that I am really not for this.
Just for a couple of things is, they'll have to come back for a site plan, and their drains and so forth would have to be come to the county and so forth like that. So there's things like that that would have to be permitted, and the county would make that.
Okay. And I know you're talking, excuse me, about the impact, but our driveway is very dangerous to pull out right now. If we're going to have a wall that's there, and also there's a dip in the road.
Thank you.
I mean, they may want to look at that too, Debbie, don't look at that. It's very dangerous, and the property, I mean, the traffic on that road is increasing every day.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else wishing to come forward at this time? Please come forward to the microphone, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public hearing at this time and turn it over to the Planning Commission for discussion.
We do have question for Jim. We do have specific screening guidelines in our
correct, yes.
That would apply to this new zoning designation.
There would be screening buffering requirements for the regulations of the side of the wall.
And that would be vegetative screening, not fence.
I have a motion by Mr. Gaines. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Abstain.
Okay, chair votes aye. We have a vote of 3 in favor, 1 abstention, and 1 absent. It is approved. Next item, there are no presentations tonight. The next item is a site development plan, SDP 1610, Song Heritage Museum.
Thank you. This is a request for sketch plan approval to allow construction on an approximately 4,320 square foot building with associated parking and road improvements. This is located at Pleasant Grove Park. Structure is to be used as a farm heritage museum on a portion of the 500 acres of tax map 30A1. It's all zoned in A1 agricultural general. So we have 1-story structure with overhang and a 20-foot gravel road will be created. I'll mention that shortly. This is the parcel here at the Pleasant Grove Park System. Exact location of the existing plantation house and museum is here. This is the comfort station and existing parking. The structure replaced here. and a new road will be used. This is the existing parking, the new building, and they'll have a road placed to connect the existing parking to the Sprout driveway. So to go from here, the road, the new parking will be placed here. There's the parking spaces, the structure, the overhang, and a gravel road for better ease of protection, as well as improvements to sidewalks or handicap access. This is their potential concept plan that they had when they submitted this project. Rel, request for approval for 4,320 square foot building associated parking and road improvements for the Farm Heritage Museum, which is a result of a partnership between the county and the Food and Historic Society. And they would possibly have rotating exhibits and material. And a motion to include the applicants here, if you have any questions.
Okay, would the applicant like to speak?
I'm Carolyn Howard from Drake Brady & Associates, and I have nothing to add to the presentation. If you have any questions, I'll be happy.
This item has been on that CFP for many years, and so we've talked about a lot of times. And what I've read about it is it seemed like a lot of it, the funding for this was by private donations and so forth like that. I will, just for so everybody will know this, I probably doesn't disqualify me from voting on it, but I do know that Mr. John May will be donating a lot of the stuff that's on the system there, and I just like to his wife is my cousin, so I don't think there's a conflict with that, so everybody can know.
It's good just for the record, I'll be contributing.
But I like to, you know me, I like to put everything out in the open.
You are a senior's wife.
Okay, do we have any questions from the applicant? Do we need to have any discussion about it? Will be an added thing to the community. I'll think to bring people to the county. Do I have a motion?
I'll give you a motion.
Okay.
I move to approve SDP 16-10, a sketch plan to construct an approximate 4,320 square foot building with associated parking and road improvements with respect to 500 acres of tax map 30, section 8, parcel 1, subject to the three conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0 and one absent. This site development plan has been approved. Not on the actual notes of my agenda here, but I think in the new business, there was one thing that Mr. Stewart was going to bring up about asking us to ask the planning department to look into the fee structure of.
Chairman, there's been some issues come up with our telecommunications ordinance, specifically section 22-27-4C, which relates to the fees for that we charge for our telecommunication applications. Specifically, issue with a lack of clarity that you might want to look at correcting. What I want to ask the planning commission is to make a motion to initiate a text amendment, change to staff to come back with proper research, hold a public hearing, and amend that ordinance with working with the county attorney to basically add more clarity and to what we have currently in the ordinance.
Where does that teach? Structure in comparison to, let's say, the use of our own house, what do we call
it? I understand that the PDC is talking about pass-through fees. So if the applicant comes in and says, I want to put a structure that they want, we don't have on staff expertise in reviewing the kind of technical data that you heard tonight from about the VFW site.
Yes.
There's nobody in this room, I don't think, certainly not I, that have any technical expertise, and the staff room doesn't either. So what we do is we contract it with an engineering firm that does have the expertise. And what we do is we submit the technical after parts of the application to the our consultant, and the consultant charges us the fee, then we charge the applicant fee, it's a straight pass. So it's $4,000, it comes to the county, but it's immediately paid over to the consultant. Part of the issue is whether that fee is reasonable under the circumstances, and whether if it's reasonable in some instances, but not in others, whether we need to make a distinction in the ordinance, because right now our ordinance is discretionary as to whether we submit it to the consultant, but it doesn't have the standards for exercising discretion. And historically, our consultant has recommended that we submit essentially all for the same fee. We have had questions from the industry about whether that's appropriate, and I think we've had a discussion, and I think the staff wants to look into that and give some ideas about refining this structure and finding when we charge fees and if we charge fees, how much they are. So we're able to get some data about the question. There are data available for fees charged by the Indian counties. I am told, I don't know this, but I'm told by an industry representative that ours is much higher. At least one order of magnitude higher than the others, and that's...
In regards to the locations, not necessarily crawling in hours.
Sounds like we need to find a new consultant.
Should something, I know we've been using the same consultant ever since we did the ordinance to do with towers and so forth like that. Do we just use the same consultant like this forever, or do we ever put out the...
That contract is up for review, but one of the issues with that contract is, I believe that the same consultant manages some of the county-owned towers, so we see if they're able to space out. So we'll need to take a look at that and see how best to move forward, potentially possibly getting another third-party expert.
That's an issue. That's something we're looking at.
And you, Mr. Stewart, probably has a little more knowledge of this than a lot of the past planning directors.
I used to consult for the power industry. Is that what Mr. Bill's getting at?
But either Mr. Stewart doesn't have the kind of expertise that's required in a lot of these cases.
Right, I know that, but I'm saying that, you know, he would probably have some knowledge of knowing about where we are as far as whether this consultant is doing that.
I've worked in several localities that have utilized different consultants. Some in here again use local consultants. Our consultant right now is based in Florida. And on the private sector side of things, we aren't here. So in here in Virginia, localities use consultants from up and down the Eastern Seaboard. So it's mainly about being localities comfortable with, you know, whether it's physical location or the fees or whatever the county is comfortable with. I'm not certain how the city's getting to be the preferred vendor here, but I do know the county's had a number of requests at home.
Would we be putting out any, after all of this, I guess, is done, would we be putting out some sort of RFP or to be out with consultant?
Like it.
Like it.
Like it.
But
I think we should.
There are other alternatives. And you don't have to have a consultant, you do other things too. But that looks like, I think fair to say that staff would probably recommend keeping a consultant.
I think we should recommend that staff go forward with the path that they recommend tonight.
Yeah, I think that gets to make a motion.
Well, there's an element of, I wouldn't call it an emergency, but I think that's fine. You don't have the text before you, recommend the text before you, but this initiates it and the staff can bring it back to you and then we can set the public hearing.
We could come up with something to bring it back to a future work session for discussion.
There is an element of, I hesitate to call it urgency, but there are applications that have either been made or they're discussing. And I know there's at least one of these applicants that's not satisfied with our orders, and that's what's triggering.
And there's some of them that they're being recommended be waived?
No, those are ones that are for county facilities.
I thought I saw something about the particular one tonight that we did tonight that was in the package about the possibility that it wasn't for the board of supervisors.
It was, but that's a county facility.
Well, the tower tonight is for a private commercial tower on non-county land. However, the board of supervisors signed a lease under section 8C of that lease stipulates that the county will waive all the.
If the county owns the facility, excuse me, owns and operates the facility, the ordinance was amended to provide there is no fee.
Right. Yeah.
In this case, the county doesn't own it, but the county uses it, and therefore the board of supervisors has waived the fee for that. That would not be the case for the kind of thing that we're discussing here. Those are straight up commercial, private commercial.
Okay, do we have a motion about this?
I move that the Nevada County Planning Commission direct staff to initiate a zoning text amendment to amend section 22-27-14 fees for supplemental review in Article 27, regulation of telecommunication facilities to improve clarity of the fee schedule utilized by the county in regards to its third-party expert, and to schedule a future public hearing for formal planning commission consideration and recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
I have a motion on this matter from Mr. Gaines. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Johnson has seconded it. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0, and one absent. Is there any other business that we need to take, any other new business that we need to go over tonight? Is there any other new business that we need to go over tonight? If there's no other new business or any other items on the agenda tonight, if there's no objection from the planning department and the planning commission, we will adjourn for this time. Seeing no objections, we are adjourned.
Maybe we'll get together some Wednesday dinner, Bert.
Yeah.
We'll keep trying.
But Luke, would you abstain because you own self-storage?